Dear listener, we hope that you've been enjoying the variety of podcasts that we have on our network. Now is your opportunity to help us by telling us a little more about you. Please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey and complete our listener survey so that we can learn more about you and your listening habits. Again, please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey. Thanks so much.
Maccabees in Israel, yeah. When the Greeks tried to assail, sell, yeah. But it was all to no avail, veil, yeah. The war went on and on and on.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you. No, it is not Hanukkah. It's Sfira, meaning the time between Passover and Shavuos, when Jews do not listen to instrumental music. We'll talk about that later on in the show and remind you about it again for like the next 6 weeks. We have a wonderful show for you today. Our guest today is Malcolm Hohenlein, Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. We're going to talk about the first 100 days of President Trump. We have an eclectic assortment of brand new a cappella Jewish music out there for your listening pleasure. The portion of the week is the portion of Tazria Metzora. It is found in Leviticus chapter 12. And we have a wonderful, insightful story at the end. Don't go away. Before I do anything else, let's go right to the news. A mass hunger strike initiated earlier this week by Arab terrorists held in Israeli prisons showed signs of weakening as close to 100 of the 1,000 strikers broke their fasts. The hunger strike was promoted in an op-ed piece in the New York Times by Fatah Tanzim terrorist leader and mass murderer Marwan Barghouti. The hunger strike gained little support in the Arab street and divided the PA leadership. An Israeli man was injured in a car ramming attack south of Jerusalem. The driver rammed his car into a bus stop near the Gush Etzion Junction. The Palestinian driver was killed by IDF soldiers. Two Palestinian sisters attempting to cross into Israel from Gaza so that one could receive cancer treatment were caught smuggling explosives. The explosives and the production of homemade bombs were hidden in tubes carried by the women labeled medical materials. U.S. Secretary of Defense James Mattis was in Israel Friday as part of his tour of the Middle East. Mattis met with Israel's Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Syria and Iran were the main topics of discussion. Some really good news. Texas is the 20th state to pass anti-boycott, divestment, and BDS legislation. Under the bill, any entity engaged in BDS activities will not be eligible for state funding. And finally, the Belgian province of Walloon voted to follow Antwerp by banning shechita, Jewish ritual slaughter, unless the animal is stunned. Small animals are to be shocked before slaughter, while beef are to be shot in the head by captive bolt immediately following slaughter. Austria passed a similar law last year, and that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herr Schulfinman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Malcolm Hohenlein, the Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. How are you today, Malcolm? Welcome back.
Thank you. How are you?
Good, thank God. I trust Passover has passed over and the whole
everything.
Good, thank God. Yeah, matzahs are gone. Thank you. Okay, so there's an old joke that sometime in like 1956, little Sammy Cohen runs into his father, grandfather and says, Zeta, Zeta, the Dodgers won the pennant. And the grandfather, being an immigrant, not really so up on English and American culture, says, I don't know what you just said, but if it's good for the Jews, I'm very happy. So we're talking about Trump and the first 100 days. So there's different areas where we could focus on as far as the Trump presidency being good for the Jews, they being first domestic policy, international policy as a whole, and then Israel. Where would you like to start, Malcolm?
Wherever you like.
Okay.
We have a Sears catalog of issues right now confronting the Jewish community domestically, internationally, in Israel, the Middle East, Iran. Anything you like.
Okay, let's start on the domestic front. I was somewhat underwhelmed, even though it turned out to be not such a domestic thing and really wasn't what it was supposed to be. During January, February, early March, there were 150 bomb scares called into JCCs around the country. And to me, it seems like the Trump administration didn't really react to it properly.
Well, first of all, on the practical level, in terms of the agencies, the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, like local police, reacted very strongly, very positively, assigned resources, did thorough investigation of how they were able to apprehend the person. I must say that I took a very conservative approach to it and said publicly that it doesn't take much to be able to get phone numbers for JCCs and make phone calls. I take much more seriously the anti-Semitism on our campuses where you have actual acts of violence. I don't dismiss the threats to the JCCs, and obviously they were very disruptive. It dissuaded people from signing up their children for the schools. It canceled many canceled events and the psychological impact aside from just the security. I also think that it's obviously the result was a relief, yet regrettable, that as somebody was in that mental state that he would engage in these activities. But my concern is that many of the organizations that heightened their security awareness and activities diminish it again and, you know, becomes a stepchild when they budget. And the dangers have not gone away. I mean, the fact is that we have to have heightened attention to security. So going back to the government, everything I saw in terms of the federal agencies and most police agencies, departments, were very responsive, took it very seriously, did the right things. There were some statements made, but I think in most cases corrected, about the seriousness and the nature of the specific target.
Okay. So what are other things in domestic issues in the Trump administration's first 100 days interest you and Malcolm?
Well, we don't deal with the domestic agenda very much. We deal with the national and international issues relating from terrorism, security, United Nations. I think the actions of the UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, have been really remarkable in setting a different tone at the UN and putting down the issue, the marker on the issue of bias against Israel. And now this month, she sits in the presidency of the Security Council and laid out a very tough agenda, saying we're not going to talk about Israel, we're going to talk about Iran, we're going to talk about their support for terrorism, their undermining regimes, et cetera. So on that front, I think we have seen a big improvement, and hopefully it will be sustained. The many other questions that occupy people, healthcare, et cetera, these are not issues that we specifically deal with.
Okay. So then let's move on to Israel then. One of the rallying points towards the Jewish community while President Trump was campaigning was that the first thing he's going to do is he's going to move the embassy to Jerusalem. So it seems that this has gone sort of like the way of we're going to throw Hillary Clinton in jail type campaign rhetoric. What do you think about that now, Malcolm?
No, I don't think it's comparable to that. I do think that the there was an intent, and I think part of the mistake was that there was too much public discussion. Obviously, I've worked for decades to see the embassy moved, and especially in the 95 legislation, which we shepherded through Congress and which established United Jerusalem as the law of America and built in a presidential waiver, which has been exercised by every president since every 6 months, and it will come up again in a month, and we'll see whether President Trump will waive it or not exercise the waiver, which would have implications in and of itself. But I think that moving the embassy has to be done in a smart way. And frankly, if they had put a plaque up on one of the consulates, we have two in Jerusalem, we have several facilities, they could have simply put up a plaque and everybody would have woken up the next morning and see that nothing has changed. I think the reaction would have been minimal. But and moving the actual embassy will take years. It's a huge enterprise with hundreds of employees. So my hope is that they still can do something, and I think sending a message that we expect the government to deal with the response to it, that we're not changing and prejudging. Everybody accepts that West Jerusalem, even the Russians said it the other day, although I think the positive responses to it were misplaced because they essentially ceded East Jerusalem to a Palestinian state or entity, which we do not accept, and the I don't want to see Jerusalem be a controversy. It's a matter of justice. It's a matter of right that Jerusalem, as the capital of Israel, be recognized, and as such, the embassies belong there. The question is how you do it. I hope that it can be done in a way that minimizes the negative reaction, but that can't dictate the policy. It has to be based upon what is right, what is just, and what is in the interest of all the parties.
Mm-hmm. Is this really, would it be such an earth-shattering thing if they just did pick it up and move it from one place to another?
Well, you can't just pick up an embassy in Tel Aviv. You can move the ambassador, can work out of Jerusalem. You can do that now. But I'm saying if you put up a plaque at the and have an office, let's say, at the consulate in near the King David Hotel or at the other embassy, the other consulate facility, both of which have ample room for it and have security already there. So he could work there a couple of days a week, but have and put the marker down that the United States recognizes West Jerusalem as the capital and hopefully United Jerusalem. That is the law of the land. Again, it's how you do it. I think that really is important. I'm afraid that because they got so much flack and that leaders from some of the Arab countries who came argued against it, I have heard from Arab leaders in my travels in the Middle East, they say, look, just don't do anything that excites the street, that incites them, that becomes a cover for more radical elements to manifest violence and to threaten regimes.
Mm-hmm.
But on the principle, they all know that West Jerusalem, there's no reason not to put an embassy in West Jerusalem. We're not talking about putting it in East Jerusalem at this point.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, our guest today is Malcolm Hohenlein, the Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Do you know the U.S. Ambassador Friedman to Israel personally?
Yes, I do.
I saw today that there was a whole thing about him. He wanted to work in Jerusalem because he lives in Jerusalem. He has a house that he bought a long time ago and in a Jerusalem neighborhood. His wanting to stay in Jerusalem, is that, would you say, political or personal? He just doesn't feel like doing a commute back and forth.
No, I don't think it is personal. You're right about it, not owning an apartment there or a residence. But that isn't the reason. He believes, and so do I, and so should everyone recognize the importance of the recognition of Jerusalem, that it's an historical anomaly, it's an injustice, it's a distortion that we don't have our embassy and other countries don't have their embassies in the recognized capital of a country. It's not a disputed capital, putting it in the locations that I cited. When you see what UNESCO, ICESCO and UNESCO and others have done over the past year in changing the names of all of the holy sites, removing the Judeo-Christian names, the 2,000 years of Christian history and 3,800 years of Jewish history have been eviscerated in these resolutions that change the names of the Western Wall, the Kotel, to Al-Barak's Wall, named for Muhammad's horse, who supposedly ascended from there to heaven, and that the Temple Mount, so-called for 2,000 years, was called Hamar Sharif, and the Rachel's Tomb changed to the name of a mosque and then with the name of Muhammad's driver, etc. Well, why would they do this with all the problems they have with everything? Why would they devote all this energy and first hyphenating the names and then removing the traditional Jewish and Christian names from these places? Because they understand that if you take away our past, you take away our future. That Jerusalem, reunited Jerusalem under Jewish sovereignty, is a reassertion of Jewish destiny, of the return of the Jews, of the future. And they say, if you take away our past, you take away our future. If we have no past, then what rights do we have? And a record is being established that in future they will look back and say, well, what do you mean? The United Nations recognize that these are only Muslim holy places. So hopefully that will be corrected, but it's an indicator and it's a reminder about why it's imperative that we assert the legitimate rights, what we have been doing on the Har HaZeitun, the Mount of Olives, reclaiming the oldest Jewish cemetery in the world, a place where prophets are buried, where leaders of Israel were buried, and tens of thousands of graves desecrated, and the International Committee for the Restoration, largely led by Americans, has succeeded in helping to turn this situation around with the aid of the government of Israel and the involvement now of Israel. These are imperative things that we do to honor our past, but also to preserve our future, that future generations will have access to these places, the core of our religious heritage and traditions.
Mm-hmm. President Trump came out just recently, I think this week, ahead of Palestinian Chairman Mahmoud Abbas's visit, which will be the beginning of next month, that he's demanded that there be a solution to this. And that sounds a lot, very much political rhetoric. It seems like the same thing that every president since 1967 has been saying, the same thing, that there should be peace in the Middle East and we're going to do it this time. Do you think anything's going to change?
Well, it depends. If Abbas is really serious about having about negotiating and about sitting down with the prime minister, the role of the United States as a facilitator is important, but negotiations have to be between the parties to be successful. And so that's really the imperative right now.
That's a very big if.
Pardon me?
That's a very big if. He hasn't been willing to do that since he's been president, since he took over for Arafat.
Exactly, and you can't impose him. So the president has invited him, and if he reads him the Riot Act and really puts down the markers and says, look, this is what you have to do in terms of coming to the table and then negotiating directly, that we're not going to impose, we're not going to give you a way out as he's been given all along, because they always say, well, he's better than the alternative. And at some point, he's not better than the alternative. I can tell you, Arab leaders talk about the kleptocracy. They bemoan the aid they've given because they say none of it ends up with the people. It all ends up with in the government. And Abbas has wasted the opportunities of his people and the chances for at least meaningful negotiations. Prime Minister Barak's plan, the Olmert plan, the Annapolis conference, the Saudi. I mean, there were so many opportunities. And Netanyahu consistently says, I'm ready to talk. Just give me a partner. And I think that is the key. If Abbas is ready, then there can be meaningful talks. If he's not, there won't be.
What do you think the U.S. could promise him that hasn't already been promised?
They shouldn't promise him anything. They've given him billions of dollars in aid. We should tell him that here is the opportunity, now, immediately, and with the changes in the Arab world, I think that there's a chance that other Arab countries will contribute or help, and they have put down the marker to him. And he consistently resists it. So there has to be a time when they say, that's it. Now you either come to the table, or we have to look for new leadership. We have to find different ways of relating to the Palestinian people. And you see that the frustration that is built there. And he's in the 11th year of his four-year term. And he is not, doesn't convene the Legislative Council. He's not had election. He's not, the question is, even if he's a legitimate leader, very doubtful.
So it looks like it's going to be standard, you know, status quo over there. Nothing's going to change, even though Trump would like it to be.
I hope it won't be. It's a good question, but we don't know until it's actually put to the test. But if the message is given to him clearly and saying no more obfuscation, you end the support of money to terrorists, you don't reward them, you don't honor them, you don't name squares for them, you don't give pensions triple what a policeman makes and an employee makes to the families of killers of Jews or to the actual killers and when they're in prison. And they you know, the more longer their prison terms, the more they kill, the more they get. That has to stop completely. And we should, and Congress is looking at ways to cut the aid to the degree to, you know, to over $300 million that he gives out in these payments. It should not have been tolerated till now. It's got to end now. And if they got to put these markers down, no more incitement, change the textbooks, create an atmosphere that is different, sit down and engage in direct negotiations, and we will be helpful. And I think that there could be economic programs that will benefit the people, but it can be that he and his kids, as Arafat did, siphon off the money from the Palestinian people and for the projects, and that money goes towards terrorism and terrorists, and as we see in Hamas and in Gaza, as it continues to be. And then I think we could have perhaps a positive climate to move forward.
You forgot maybe perchance even they might even want to recognize Israel's right to exist. You know, so
that is a given.
Yeah,
I think it has to be. You know, I don't believe we need his recognition. I believe he has to say it and talk to his people about it so they understand that Israel's there to stay, and we recognize it, the dream of eliminating Israel, because they still profess the stages policy, you know, where they take what they can get now, and then they move on to the next stage. The fact that Barghouti now, who's leading this hunger strike, you know, is trying to reassert himself politically and is serving, you know, multiple life sentences for murder of Jews. This is the kind of leadership that can emerge. And the West too often said, well, you know, that was the past. It's now. No. Guy with so much Jewish blood on his hands can't be a leader and can't be allowed to be the leader.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, again, if you're just joining us, our guest is Malcolm Hohenlein, Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Any other points that we should talk about as far as Trump's first 100 days, yes or up, you know, up or down, thumbs up, thumbs down, Malcolm?
Well, I think on Iran, they've been sending strong messages. The question is, what they will do about the sanctions, which are coming up for renewal, how he will deal with the JCPOA agreement, which the Iranians say, well, if you don't continue to waive the sanctions, it's a violation, and then we can violate. They are violating it. And as the administration said this week, they're certainly violating the spirit, but they're also violating the letter with the missile program, which is a violation of Security Council resolutions, the aid to terrorists, the undermining of regimes, the threats against Israel again this week. I mean, Iran is the major problem in the Middle East. You resolve Iran, you can resolve Syria and many of the other problems. Iran is building now a road from Iran through Iraq, Syria, Lebanon. They're changing the population. They're bringing in Shiites to replace Sunni populations in Syria. They are creating the Shiite crescent that they had long sought and talked about and has been warned about. We are seeing them active everywhere in Africa, in South America, up to the border, our border in Mexico, and engaging in training of terrorists, in all sorts of narco-terrorism trade, even in the States, with illegal cigarettes and drugs and things that help finance the terrorist activities of groups like Hezbollah. and we have to do more to crack down on them. But the core is Iran, and until we really confront it and hold them to account, and no more excuses and no more obfuscation about it, that is really the key.
Do you think we should go back to sanctions?
Not go back. I think we have to enhance them, and those that are there to be continued, and to find new ones that target both the individuals and the companies that are engaged in trade. I think the Boeing sale should be at least postponed, if not canceled. We know that the company they're selling it to has been engaged in supporting military activities, and the head of it is a former head of the Iran Revolutionary Guards Navy, who made very threatening comments when he was in office. So the idea that it's really a civilian airline is, I think, certainly subject to challenge. And I think those messages and the banking sanctions have to be sustained, because companies and countries are not, if they're faced with the choice of doing business in Iran and doing business in the United States, they're not going to jeopardize the biggest market in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, and last couple of weeks ago, President Trump ordered the shelling of a Syrian Air Force strip, airport, if you want to call it that. Are you surprised at the repercussions, the fallout or lack thereof, Malcolm?
Not at all. Terrorists like Iran and others test for weakness. Haniya, Osama bin Laden, Haniya, the head of Hamas, Khamenei have all said the same thing, that the West lacks will and determination. They saw that America had withdrawn. And as one Arab leader told me recently, they left without saying goodbye. They saw America vanish from the scene or withdraw from the scene. Now America hopefully will come back and be a presence, and that's why you've seen all these Arab leaders coming to America now. And the message was, and all along was, that we, if you don't respond, if you don't show them strength, if they could humiliate our sailors, if they could shoot across the bows of our planes, of our ships, if they could try to block us in the Straits of Hormuz, if they can send those little boats to play havoc with our destroyers, and we don't take them out, take one out as a message, when we finally fired across the bows of those ships, they ran away. Terrorists, when they encounter strength, will withdraw. They exploit weakness. And I said this in discussions with officials in the White House and State Department all along, that they should not be concerned. You don't dictate it based upon what the response is. Then we will respond and escalate our response. I don't want to see a war. The way you prevent the war is to show that kind of strength, to show the determination, to show them that America will stand up. And these guys will back down. You have to do it smart. You have to have real policies. You have to have clear vision about it. But we have the clout, the capability, and we sent wrong messages. When we took out an aircraft carrier from the Persian Gulf, I said to them, "What we did it because of the budget crisis. I said, I believe it. But do you think there's one person in Tehran who believes that, who doesn't think America has the money to keep two ships there, two aircraft carriers, if we wanted to? Or did they believe that the military option at least was being diminished, if not removed? And they will act on their perception. So we can't think in Western terms. Too often, leaders think, and because, you know, we have certain orientations about rights and freedoms, democracy, but they don't think in the same terms we do. Words don't even have the same meaning. So we have to act based on how they perceive things, because that is the reality that will dictate what they do.
Okay, understood. Okay, so we're running out of time. Just 100 days, President Trump, you give him good for the Jews, thumbs up, thumbs down. How do you vote, Malcolm Hohenlein?
No, I don't know. I don't express those kind of views, but I think that there have been positive sides. He's appointed many Jews to key positions, and I think it's very early in this administration. Many of the jobs have been filled. 100 days is not enough time for a completely new administration to really put its markers, but he has reengaged. He has made a presence felt. And, reality will dictate a lot of things that people say in campaigns until they have to face the tachlis, the reality of the world, often will temper and shape what they do. So I'm hopeful. America is too important. We're at a too critical a stage. We face real challenges. but I think we have great opportunities.
Okay, wonderful. Thank our guest, Malcolm Hohnlein, the Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, and continued success, and we'll call you up next time something happens.
Great. Take care.
Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We are playing a cappella-only music for the next bunch of weeks. That is because during this time period from between, that doesn't make too many participles over there, from the time of Pesach to Shavuos, we just finished Pesach and Shavuos comes up the beginning of June, about a little less than 2,000 years ago, Rabbi Akiva, who was like, had the major academy, he had 24,000 students. This is big. And what was even more impressive is that Rabbi Akiva knew the first names of every one of his students. This is like, whoa, this is a rabbi. They all died in 33 days during this time from a plague. So since then, we'll talk about this in a couple of weeks, give it more time. Since then, Jews have commemorated this sad time, not getting married, not listening to music, not buying new clothes, not buying a new house, not decorating a house, trying to stay from things that are like, you know, we call it quasi-mourning, not to get a haircut, this kind of stuff. Not that I'm joyous when I get my haircut. Yippee, I got my haircut today. But it says that a person walking around with long hair is a sign of being disheveled. He's not clean. He's not, you know, kept. So that's the way it's considered. So, for your listening pleasure, this is the Maccabees. The song is called Achenu, Our Brothers. Achenu kol beis Yisrael, hanesunim batzara uvashivya, haundim vein bayam, uvein bayabasha.
any plans.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Herschel Finman here. We're continuing with our More Music, More Music. This is 613. The song is called Shabbat, which means the Holy Sabbath.
That Shabbos feeling, it's on my own. I feel so hectic till I say Shabbat Shalom. In any city, I feel at home. Right from the start to the last Birkat HaMazon.
I got that pride in my religion. Got my friends and family. Got that challah in the oven. It's so hot. We keep these same traditions after so many centuries. That's the way we Jews will rock it on Shabbat. It's Friday night. We'll say the brachot. A cup of wine and a pair of Merot. Loved ones are here.
Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Herschel Finman here. Coming up next, we got more music. This is a Don Alum. It's actually one of, I like this tune. It's a Don Alum is one of those liturgical pieces that you, it's been proven. You could sing it to any tune and it works. So this is the Amen. That's Amen. You know, it's all men, guys. You know, Amen a cappella and a Don Alum.
I don't know love, I share my life.
Dum 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 ba da da dum ba da dum.
The terre est cold, it's in Ivra.
Dum 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 ba da da dum ba da dum.
Let Nasa be half so cold.
Dum 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 ba da da dum ba da dum.
Asai melech shemonikra.
Dum 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 ba da. I don't know love.
Don't know love, I share my life.
You enjoyed that. We got coming up with no interruption. This is Elokai Neshama. The artist is Nemuel.
Hashem Elokai v'Elokei Avosai. Hashem Elokai v'Elokei Avosai.
Kol zeman moidei ani Nishomo, Nishomo sheno satobi, Nishomo sheno satobi, Tehoi rohi. Elekai, Nishomo, Nishomo sheno satobi, Nishomo sheno satobi, Tehoi rohi. Kol zeman.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. The portion is Tasriya Metzora. It's a double portion beginning with chapter 12 of the book of Leviticus. I like this, the way they have it this year when we put the two together, because they're basically talking about the same thing. And if it's split, like in a leap year, so then I have to spend 2 weeks talking about the same thing. But like this, it's all like one neat little package, 12 to 15, chapters 12 through 15 is the portion. It talks about people who are not allowed to go into the temple because of personal ritual impurity. They include a woman who just gave birth, a metzora, which is someone who is afflicted with a spiritual skin disease that affects them physically, little white spots, which people don't get anymore. And azava, and these are people, man or woman, who have some sort of genital flux, which is abnormal. And these are all considered spiritual malaises. Now, let's talk about the beginning. The first one is the woman who just gave birth is not allowed to go into the temple. All of these laws have no rhyme or reason, rationale whatsoever. All the laws of ritual purity, impurity, fit into the category of chok, which means God says, listen, I told you the reason for about 600, about 13 of them or so, trust me on it. And then we say, okay, we'll go along. There is a reason or rationale. God just never told Moses, and therefore we don't know. So it's not, it has anything to do with the impurity of a woman who just gave birth. It's probably for her benefit if we tell a woman who just gave birth, oh, by the way, you can't go to the temple. What it means is really, you should be staying home and recuperating. Don't think you have to be like so holy and pick yourself. It's more important that you stay home and take care of yourself, take care of the kid, than it is to go traipsing off to the temple, even in Jerusalem. But that's only my personal slant on it, and nothing of this has ever been recorded or written down as the answer. But it's an interesting thing. There are different, a menstruant is not allowed to have relations with her husband because she's got this issue flowing out of her body. The same thing's going on with a woman who just gave birth, but she is allowed to have relations with her husband. She's just not allowed to go to the temple. So what's the deal here? It's very much similar to the Jewish people in their state of exile. The word nida, which is translated in Hebrew as menstruant, really means an exile. So the Jews now find themselves in the third exile, the first one being the Egyptian exile, the second one being the Babylonian exile. We are at the end of the Roman exile. And longing for the rebuilding of the third temple of Mashiach coming, it should be today. It says that we've gone through stuff. We're engaged. We're doing all the mitzvahs that we needed to do. Anything that had to get done, any prerequisite for Mashiach having to come is already there. We are in a state of, say, quote unquote, pure to our husband, meaning the Almighty. But there's this exile going on. It's still there. It's a big pain. And for whatever reason, we have to endure it. It says a woman, she was exempt for 40 days for the birth of a boy, 80 days for the birth of a girl. As soon as that time was over, bing, didn't matter what was happening with her body. She could offer a sacrifice and was therefore allowed to go into the temple. And it was instantaneous. So we also are looking for the Almighty. Listen, we did everything we need to do. It's, you know, it says, Keharafai, in the blink of an eye, Mashiach will come. In the blink of an eye, we're going to be right back as we're taking a quick commercial break. Don't go away. Hasidic story coming up. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Go to rabbifinman.com. You'll find a way to contact me, first of all. You'll also find additional things all over the place. You'll find archived editions of the radio show going back maybe about a year and a half now. You could binge listen. People are into binging these days. You can even do it in the car while you're driving, you know, if you've got the proper electronic device to do that. There's also an archived edition of the E-Parsha, U-Story, Hasidic U-Story, U-Parsha, the whole business. They're all over there. Classes, go check it out. You'll have you can spend all day over there. There's also the donations page. We're almost done with April. Guess what? We still have to pay for April. We need you to do that. Donations coming slow. Thank you. Passover was a little bit slow. People stopped during the holidays. I know they stay away. I myself personally didn't go to my computer once during the holiday of Passover because I said, I don't need to. I'm not going to. So I understand, but we're back in the grind and we're not grounding matzo flour at this point, buddy. We need you to step up, actually sit down in front of your computer. Go to rabbifinman.com. Go to the donations page. Click donations. Click the number you'd like to donate. Or at the bottom, you can add any number you want. You know, there's an infinite number amount of numbers, but they have to be positive, though. So it's positive infinity. We always emphasize the positive on the Jewish Hour. Do it today. And if we make our what we owe the station, I'm not going to be doing this next week. I'll be telling a longer story. Don't like doing internet giving? Understood. Let's drop your donation in an envelope and send it to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Okay, the Rebbe Marash, the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe, he was the leader of the Lubavitch movement from the year 1865 to 1773. Not very long. 1783, excuse me. Not very long. He was always in a hurry. He actually died of diabetes at the age 49. So it was before they invented insulin, which wasn't invented or discovered, isolated until, I think, 1924. But he died of insulin, and he was always in a hurry. His discourses were very short. He always had to go where he had to go. He actually spent some time traveling to Paris. He announced one day, I am traveling to Paris. Which from Lubavitch, just from Lubavitch to Vitebsk, which was the county seat, was an all-day journey. Okay, so it says that the closest train station to Lubavitch, they didn't have their own train station, was 7 versts, which I haven't got a clue how big a verst is. But it wasn't exactly close. You could do it in bicycle, from I understand, from other stories. But it was a trek to get from Lubavitch to Sprenval, probably several trains to get across to Paris. When he was at Paris, he told his little entourage that he was accompanied by two very wealthy magnates, that he was going to stay at the Alexander Hotel. The Alexander Hotel in the 1870s in Paris was the hoo-ha place to stay. This is where heads of government stayed. He pulls into the, and here he is, he's this Lubavitcher Rebbe. I mean, he's got his hat, he's got his beard, he's got his kapot, the whole business, he's got the whole thing. He looks like just somebody who just came out of Eastern Europe because he had just come from Eastern Europe. He comes to the clerk and he says, I want a suite of rooms, please. And they tell him we have something on the 10th floor. It's a 10-story hotel. They didn't have the penthouses back then. You know, it says it's going to cost this much. He says, nah, have you got anything better? He said, I'd prefer something on the casino floor, if you don't mind. So he says, we have a room. He has three rooms. It's going to cost you this much. I think it was 2,000 francs for the night. This is like a lot of money. Okay. The people with whom he was staying, they couldn't afford to stay at that hotel. They stayed at another hotel. He checked into his suite of rooms. And after a while, he went to the casino. And sitting at one of the gaming tables, there's a guy sitting there, and he's playing dice of some sort. And every once in a while, he'd take a sip of wine. The Rebbe is watching him and says to him, looks at him and says, non-kosher wine is forbidden. That's all he said. Then, a little while later, he says, non-kosher wine makes a person insensitive to spirituality. It stuffs your heart and mind. And he looked him in the eye and he said, be a Jew. He went back to his room. A short while later, this young man inquired, who is that person? He requested an audience with him. And the rabbi went back to Paris. And sometime later, this young man who was sitting and drinking in a casino became the patriarch of a very large Hasidic family. They should all live happily ever after. That's going to do it for us. We hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. Take care.